From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The famed dissident Chinese artist Ai Weiwei has taken on the most urgent humanitarian issue of our time, the global refugee crisis. In a new documentary called Human Flow, Ai Weiwei explores the human cost of war, violence, and climate change that has made refugees of 65 million people. Traveling with his camera crew to 23 countries over the course of a year, Ai Weiwei captured in intimate moments the desperation that has driven refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Eritrea, Palestine, and Myanmar to risk their lives escaping violence. The film is sweeping and vast, with drone camera shots showcasing in aerial shots the vast extent of the crisis. But it is also personal, as we see a father cry over the loss of his entire family on a boat, two brothers tearfully promising to follow one another across continents, a grandmother complaining about the labyrinth of changing rules for refugees, and much more. At a time when Europe and the US are rewriting their rules for entry in direct response to the massive demand for people looking for safe haven, Ai Weiwei's Human Flow puts human faces to the numbers. Here's a trailer for the documentary.
Being a refugee is much more than a political status. It is the most pervasive kind of cruelty that can be exercised against a human being. You are forcibly robbing this human being of all aspects that would make human life not just tolerable, but meaningful in many ways.
The more immune you are to people's suffering, that's very, very dangerous. It's critical for us to maintain this humanity.
الان 60 روزه با پسرم همینطوری داریم میچرخیم ولی هیچ کس نیستش که بگه یه راهی رو بخواد به ما نشون بده کجا برم زندگیمو شروع کنم
If children grow up without any hope, without any prospects for the future, without any sense of them being able to make something out of their lives, then they will become very vulnerable to all sorts of exploitation, including radicalization.
The officials came here and told them, look, there's no way you're going to get papers to continue. Either you go voluntarily or we arrest you.
I respect you. I respect the passport and I respect you.
It's going to be a big challenge to recognize that the world is shrinking and people from different religions, different cultures are going to have to learn to live with each other.
And that's a trailer for Human Flow, a new documentary. The film is by the internationally renowned and award-winning Chinese dissident artist and activist Ai Weiwei, an outspoken critic of the Chinese government's anti-democratic policies and poor human rights record. He's been jailed for his activism and placed under house arrest over the years, and he's now traveling in the U.S. promoting his new film. I had the chance recently to sit down and speak with Ai Weiwei about his film, Human Flow.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you to have me here.
So your film is very, very powerful. Unfortunately, it's one of the few films that's actually covering this massive crisis. We just aren't seeing enough media coverage here in the U.S. of the global refugee crisis. How important is it for Americans, whose government has had a hand in a lot of the war and violence, to see a film like this?
I think it's very important for several reasons. First, Americans a leading power, you know, the really, really big superpower in the world. And the human crisis like this happened. U.S. do have a responsibility to really to have some vision and some thoughts about how to deal with this situation. If you see, since World War II, this is the biggest human crisis ever. You know, it's about 65 million people or even more and are being forcefully leave their home. And the many, many regional problems do have U.S. Interests or involvement in there. So as a result, or partially as a result of a globalization, and the U.S. do have a responsibility. And to have this film to be shown in U.S. is even more important, because very often people in United States will think, oh, that something happened in different region or different continent. It doesn't really directly affect the U.S. But look at the U.S., the policy, what's happening today. You know, the restrict of this traveling ban, or to build this beautiful fence or wall, you know, between U.S. and Mexico. It all shows the leadership has a very, very questionable position in dealing with migration and refugees. And, you know, we all know U.S. history is come from mixed migrants, and many of them, their parents or grandparents are being forced out of their home or locations. So this is a issue which should be directly related to U.S.
The film shows a movement of masses of people, and yet you have a lot of very intimate moments where people are either talking to one another or talking to you. How did you convince some of these folks to tell you their stories, some of whom seemed to, you know, like any one of us would be, might be a little bit ashamed or embarrassed about being in this helpless situation and forced out of their homes? How did you convince them to just talk to you?
The people in this kind of circumstance, they have a very different sense about what we're in the normal life would think about intimacy or those privacy, all those issues are very different, because if you have been through this kind of war zone and you see your families are crashed or killed, and the only thing you want to do is to let somebody else to know it. And, you know, those is about protect the dignity of life. There's no real, you know, they never hesitated to do it.
And so you had no trouble?
No. They're of course, they have their own understanding. They're not beggars. They really very, the people have very strong dignity. But they are quite open, any kind of discussion. You know, they are very brave people and very open. Most of them are very well educated.
I want to ask you about a few specific moments in the film. There was one that moved me tremendously, and it was a shot that you or your camera person captured that was almost in the dark between two brothers, and one of them is crying to the other about following him anywhere. Tell me a little bit about that moment.
In the camp, basically, all the camp are dark in every tent. There's no light in the tents, and it can be constantly raining for weeks or months.
Raining?
Raining, yeah. You're basically sitting in the mud. You know, children, they all have very cold feet, you know, wet. And these two children, these two brothers, they're from Afghanistan or Pakistan, so they are basically have no idea where they would accept them. They're being refused. They're being stopped by the border, and you know, they spend all the money and all those kind of dangerous journey to come to a place which will block them and maybe send them back. And so you see people really feel being betrayed. You know, they think the Europe or it's a land which protect very basic humanity. You know, with this treaty in 1950s, the United Nations treaty's definition by refugees, it's very clear. You have to accept people has been forcefully leaving their home because various reasons. But what they see experiencing in Europe is all kind of excuse or with no explanation.
Now that there's a lot of people, they're changing their rules, right?
Yeah. It changes every day. You know, even Germany accepted the majority of refugees come to Europe, now sending Afghanistans back to their home. And they give them definition, Afghanistan is a safe nation, which is absolutely untrue. You know, every day you see, you know, but people are so blind, so selfish. And it doesn't really have any dignity in protecting those values. It's not to protecting a few refugees or, you know, a human life. It's about the foundation of our European or West civilization, you know, human rights, basic humanity. If those values be not, we don't protect those values, then our society become a different kind of society.
Let's also talk about children. This was another very powerful aspect of it. There are, of course, whole families and many children among the 65 million refugees, and your film captured some of what they have to go through, the least of which is not even being able to go to school for a few years, and the worst of which is the diseases they're exposed to. How did the stories of children move you? How did you feel like you could capture their stories in a film? Because, you know, it's hard to have a sit-down, long conversation with a child.
It's very hard even to present one child's story because each child have extremely difficult stories. I don't think I even want to listen to them because they are the same. There's millions of children would have lost their chance for life. They will not have education. They don't have a medical care, of course. They worry about the next food, you know, what they will be served, but it's always the same, a little bit of bread, and you know, it's the minimum way you can maintain a life. And they will stay like this for years, and their parents, they see their parents are useless being, you know, nobody give them a job, and they always in the bad mental condition. And of course, a lot of explorations about young kids. You know, they have to be, they can be in many ways assaulted. So there's no protection for children. And average refugees will maintain that status could be somewhere from 20 to 25 years. That's their whole life. And totally wasted, the whole generation.
There are refugees from so many different countries that you feature in your film, the Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, also Eritrea, the Rohingya from Myanmar, which I thought was really great that you included, but also Palestinians. And I'm wondering, in those situations where thousands of refugees from different countries had to be together, what were the dynamics between refugees from different countries? Did they... I know in your film you showcase that in one camp they set up their own economy. Does language get in the way? Do they form ties?
I think, surprisingly, the refugees between themselves are very tolerate. And, you know, you see different kind of religious practice in the refugee camps. I think being through so much, I think all they want is to have a peaceful life. And but it's a very hard game to survive without very basic understanding or support from a local government. Actually, they want is some kind of understanding, you know, to not to paint them as someone who is dangerous or who is different from us.
You included the issue of Palestinians as refugees in your film, and unfortunately Palestinians are here in the United States don't get much fair coverage. But one of the parts of that story that I found fascinating was the story of the tiger in that traveled through one of the tunnels. And I'm assuming there was some deep symbolism about the fact that all of these authorities came together to to help the tiger get safe haven. They all managed to find ways to cooperate to get the tiger to a safe location in ways that authorities just don't do for real human beings.
No, they will never let those young graduates, those women, just want to have one chance to see the world. And they love that land. And, you know.
You spoke with a group of, I think it was eight Gazan women on the beach.
Yeah, 8 and 10 of them. And, you know, and all, I heard so many stories. For generations, they have been stay within a wall, which cannot move. The film is about a human flow. You know, it flows by many, many reasons, but it's also somebody somewhere can get stuck in somewhere, can never had the rights to go over that wall, you know, that build for their life. It's like a jail. And for millions of people living in such an unbelievable condition.
Because Gaza has been under a siege, an Israeli siege, for many years now. Let's also talk a little bit about the fact that you have a broad definition of refugees, which I think is important. In Africa, you profiled how there are many refugees being created through the climate crisis. And I'm wondering if we really need to start to broaden our definition of refugees to include climate refugees, because that's going to be an increasingly important reality in the future.
I think the refugee definition certainly needs to be broadly redefined. Climate change is one factor. Lacking of education and famine is another factor, because those things are forcefully for people doesn't have enough resource to survive, and have very often have to push them to go to somewhere else. So. After the globalization, the whole situation in the world changed. You know, as West, we so much enjoyed the resource and the possibilities, but at the same time, a lot of casualties. And you know, we have to rethink about and deal the whole global situation as one condition, rather to think about regional or national problems. I think that's a very limited vision, and it's very selfish, and very often it come to out some kind of shameless conclusions.
And that actually brings me to this question of, you know, watching your film, it felt like more than ever the idea of borders is such an arbitrary idea. Where borders fall are, you know, products of history, and they're these artificial constructs that people are forced to cross. And you point out in your film, not too long ago, there were only 7 or 8 countries in the world that were fenced in, and today there are something like 70. And so unfortunately, countries like the U.S. are putting up physical borders, like in Macedonia, are putting up these physical borders to lock people in, to keep them from being able to flow.
I think this kind of effort is like a slap on the face of so-called democracy and human rights. You know, it happens in today, happens in United States, and as of the current decision, will alarm the us to say we have to act up. We have to, you know, say stop it, because this is certainly a very big mistake.
And some here in the U.S. might take issue with the fact that as part of a film on refugees, you included the U.S.-Mexico border. So you see Mexicans and other people from Latin America coming to the U.S. as part of the global refugee crisis?
I think if you look at the large way, you know, the globalization and the people seeking for economic possibilities, on the both sides, it's not just one side. You know, Mexicans historically has been working in that area. It's quite a free passing area, and in the history, many land also used to belong to Mexico. So Mexico exists before the U.S. So those are historical issues. And then suddenly you want to build walls because you're rich, but still in those regions they hire, you know, Mexico become a very important force for the economic development in those areas. So just brutally to set up this kind of metal, you know, borders, I think it doesn't really shows a big nation like United States have friendly relations with their own neighbors.
I want to talk finally a little bit about the making of the film. The film is visually very stunning and powerful. I'm assuming you used drones to capture some of it, and also your own iPhone footage. How important was it to be able to use these different techniques to show the scale of the global refugee crisis? You had the big scale, and then you had those intimate moments.
I am an artist. I always like to create a language. The language has to be defined by myself. So it often relate to the content, you know, how to show this kind of image in relating to global situation in such a large scale. So you then, thanks technology, the drones are so easy to apply now. But to make it not as a as a performance, but rather a clear definition about what you want, it's always a challenge. In many camps, or almost every of them, are forbidden to use drones, and many of them are military zones, and many nations doesn't let drone to across the border. So, but you bear risk, but you always have the challenge to see if that a few seconds is important. So you risk, you always risk. But in many cases, I use iPhones because I can get closer and closer to the subject. You know, it's really, really, sometimes your iPhone have to touch them and drop in the water, or things like this happens all the time because it just had getting too close. And but that creates some kind of image which is, it shows, you know, the film shows the how close your heart and your feelings in relating to what they're shooting.
You also have scenes in the film where you are getting a haircut in a refugee camp, and you're also giving a haircut.
Yeah, you don't touch those people, and they also, you invite them to touch you. You won't see.
How important was that?
I think it's to show you become one of them, and they also see they're somehow relate to you. You know, you change your passport, you buy things from them, you make some kind of shish kebab, or, you know, it's those things I'm naturally relate to. I grew up in very difficult situation, so I know I'm not different from them. Even I'm an artist or with very different status, but I'm making a film there, but still, I do feel we have no difference.
Finally, Ai Weiwei, you have very intimate experience with dealing with a dissident government and a government that violates human rights and paying a personal price for it. Today, here in the United States, we're in a country that's increasingly also having to deal with how to combat an authoritarian government. We're seeing increasing human rights abuses in our own country. From your personal experience, what advice would you give Americans for how to deal with our new reality?
I think we all have a new reality globally every day, and not only just in China, but in US and in Germany. And the reality is each generation have to redefine their own rights, have to struggle for freedom. Freedom is never something can last for very long. It takes each generation to really define it to about their own specific rights. And based on that, and we all be regret.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been the internationally renowned and award-winning Chinese dissident, artist, and activist Ai Weiwei. We've been discussing his new and ambitious documentary, Human Flow, which is opening in theaters nationwide in October. Details about screenings are found at humanflow.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.